Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving in sunny Seattle.
And in the real Washington, I'm Ken Reardon.
Oh, it's so wrong, Ken. You so have that backwards.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yes, Reardon, Ken.
You are in what people here call the other Washington.
I know. Why are you there, by the way, Ron? What's doing in Seattle?
I am all over the most important story in American politics this week. I'm doing a little investigative work into what happened here during Monday Night Football that has the rest of the country absolutely obsessed and staring at their televisions nonstop.
Flood a section of the end zone with as many Seahawks as you can and give someone a chance.
Fought for by Tate with Jennings simultaneous. Who has it? Who they give it to?
Ron, I know you're in Seattle, but interception or touchdown?
I've been out here long enough to do a lot of interviewing and talk to a lot of people and get really down to the hard nuts of this entire controversy. And to a person, everyone I've interviewed out here says, touchdown.
In Seattle? Really? You're not in Green Bay, are you?
It's amazing. You see, if you go around the country, you will hear different views on political issues. For example, Paul Ryan, well, he was looking at it a little differently, even when he was running around in Ohio.
Give me a break. It is time to get the real refs. And you know what? It reminds me of President Obama and the economy. If you can't get it right, it's time to get out. I half think that these refs work part-time for the Obama administration in the budget office. They see the national debt clock staring them in the face. They see a debt crisis, and they just ignore and pretend it didn't even happen.
I think that's pretty much a perfect analogy, don't you, Ken?
Yes.
I mean, it's precise in every detail.
And I'm trying to figure out why they don't use Paul Ryan more on the campaign trail. You know something? I mean, we talked about once upon a time, we said, boy, this is going to really make the difference. Paul Ryan either will be a great asset to the Republican ticket because he's so young and conservative and vibrant and full of ideas, or he will be a detriment to the Republican ticket because the Ryan plan.
Well, he's young and he's full of ideas.
Full of ideas, yeah. Well, the point is nobody's talking about Paul Ryan, and for better or worse, nobody's talking about, what's the other guy's name, Joe Biden. It's not only just about Romney versus Obama. It's all about Romney versus Obama in the state of Ohio.
Yes, that does seem to be where everything is concentrated. You have both of the campaigns going to probably the same parts of Ohio on the same day in this week. And certainly you have both Romney and Ryan together and campaigning sort of as father and son team. But you raised a good point about Paul Ryan, and I think we should pursue that just for another moment. Back in Wisconsin, which is one of the most important swing states this year because of Paul Ryan being on the ballot in part, they're wondering why they're not seeing more Paul Ryan around the country. And here's Scott Walker, the governor, highly controversial in his own right, doing an interview with conservative radio talk show host Charlie Sykes last week.
They not only need to use him out on the trail more effectively, they need to have more of him rub off on Mitt, because I think Mitt thinks that way, but he's got to be able to articulate that. I think he's got a compelling message. He's just got to get out and tell it. And I think too many people are restraining him from telling it.
And I kind of think this is one of the true indicators that the race may be slipping away from the Romney people, or at least that's the perception here at the end of September, the beginning of October, in that a lot of people are saying, well, if we only used Paul Ryan more, or if we only saw a more combative Mitt Romney, we know all those post-mortems before the election is over. And we saw that with George H.W. Bush in 92. We saw it with Bob Dole in 1996. And we saw that perhaps in 2008, if they only unleashed Sarah Palin more, we know it would have been better for the Republican Party. But it seems to be an indication that at least as of this moment, end of September, early October, the race is slipping away from them. And the polls seem to indicate that, at least for now.
There does seem to be a certain self-fulfilling prophecy about some of the campaigns that you just mentioned. If things aren't going well in September, people start throwing dirt on the campaign in such a way that it's harder for them to come back in October and make the comeback that they otherwise almost surely would. This is a pendulum swinging process. We are nowhere near being a decided country in terms of our politics. We're very closely divided. So one would expect, and I still expect, that there will be a bounce back for the Romney-Ryan ticket. Now, it may be geared by the debates that are starting very soon, and particularly perhaps by that vice presidential debate on October 11th in Centre, Kentucky. I think it's pronounced center, actually, even though they spell it like the French. They're having the vice presidential debate there, and as you say, that other fellow, Joe Biden, will be there, and he's capable of sort of, well, opening a whole new front. So I suspect there is going to be a comeback, and a lot of these Republicans, from Scott Walker to all these commentators and writers and good Lord, Peggy Noonan, the former speechwriter for Ronald Reagan, saying terrible things about this campaign in places where other conservatives are going to see them, like the Wall Street Journal. They're way out there premature, and they're hurting their own ticket.
One thing we must keep in mind with the vice presidential debate, probably the most significant, in my mind at least, the VP debate in history was 1988. Lloyd Benson talking about Dan Quayle, you're no Jack Kennedy. All the cameras looking at Quayle like he was just, you know, the deer in the headlights. And everybody said it was a great victory for Benson, a terrible day for Quayle. And the Bush-Quayle ticket that year won 40 out of 50 states. So I kind of think that whatever Paul Ryan vis-a-vis Joe Biden is going to turn out to be, I still suspect it's not going to make much of a difference. But what's still fascinating to me is that Ohio has been pretty close in recent years. George W. Bush won it by 4 points in 2000, maybe 2 points in 2004. That was a famous election that had John Kerry gotten maybe 60,000-70,000 more votes, he would have been president. But in 2008, you know, big Obama year, he only won Ohio by 5 points. The thought of it being a runaway, Washington Post has it by 8 points. Quinnipiac, New York Times, CBS has it by 10 points. I agree with you, Ron. I think it will tighten up. But again, in all these swing state polls and all these battleground state polls, Mitt Romney is not leading in any of them. And that includes states like North Carolina, which not too long ago we all thought was in the Romney column.
I still expect North Carolina will vote for Romney, as Indiana will, and Missouri, which were the other two of the three closest states back in 2008. I don't see a scenario by which Obama actually improves on his 2008 showing in very many states. But right now, you're right, it looks like he's improving on his 2008 showing in the state of Ohio. And I find that pretty close to inexplicable, hard to understand. Now, surely he does benefit from the improvement in the auto industry and from the corollary industries there in Ohio, and that is a legitimate reason for people to be fonder of him today than 4 years ago. But he's up substantially in these most recent polls, which may just be a spike and may not be representative. He is up substantially in areas of the state that he did not do that well in 2008. This really raises the question of whether this is related to Obama and his performance, which, as we know, is not that well thought of by the voters in general, by the public in general, or whether it's more related to this tailspin that we've seen on the part of Mitt Romney's campaign and to some degree the candidate himself.
And you're absolutely right, and I think that's what's getting Republicans to be tearing their hair out, thinking that, as you know, the old John Lovett thing, how could we be losing to this guy? And yet, if you look at all the polls, not only Ohio, both the Washington Post and the New York Times, CBS News polls have President Obama leading in Florida. Now, one poll, I think it was Mason-Dixon, had it 48 Obama, 47 Romney. But again, none of these states, even Wisconsin, which Paul Ryan was supposed to give a good boost when he came on the ticket, Wisconsin seems to be 5, 6, 7, 8 points. So at some point, he's going to have to make his move. We always talk about the debates coming up, which starts next Wednesday in Denver, the first presidential debate. But aside from like Reagan Carter in 1980, I can't think of a single presidential debate that really affected the outcome of the race. Everything maybe gave a little momentum one way or the other, but didn't seem to turn the corner for either candidate.
I would agree with you that 1980 was the most dramatic example of a campaign that was turned around and sent in the opposite direction by a debate, which then was clearly dispositive because Ronald Reagan went on to win pretty easily.
And there was only one debate that year, and that was October 28th, late in the campaign, right before the election.
Craziness, really, to put all the chips on something that came so late, and that was another one of the mistakes made that year by the Carter campaign. But there have been other debates, I believe at least, and maybe this is hard to prove in terms of actual political science, but just on the seat of the pants impression that one got from some of the other debates and some of the other years, I still believe that Gerald Ford cost himself in 1976 and might have overtaken Jimmy Carter and kept the presidency had that debate gone a little better for him. I also thought that in the year 2000, George W. Bush, who was a bit on the ropes that fall after Al Gore staged something of a rally and came after him in September of 2000, and W. was not supposed to do well in the debates because he is not seen as an articulate or at least not glib fellow, Gore put on this remarkable series of performances in three different persona in the different debates, none of which was attractive, some of which were quite off-putting and became the basis for parodies that people still get paid to do of Al Gore today.
Wait, Ron,
I don't believe that helped him.
Ron, you're absolutely right. Matter of fact, I brought with me a piece of tape of what Al Gore said during that debate. I want you to hear something. Here it goes right now. Pretty good, huh?
Lockbox.
Yeah, I like the sigh.
Yeah,
what I really liked was the way you rolled your eyes.
Yeah, you heard that on the tape? Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's those little things that people see, like when George H.W. Bush looked at his watch. It's hard to get tape of that as well. But there were some little things, little body language things that people say, gee, really, is that really what just happened? So, again, look, George H.W. Bush was trailing Bill Clinton in 92. The debates didn't help him one way or the other. But Gore and Bush were pretty much even before the debates. The election was pretty even as well. But those little things could make a difference in voters' perceptions of the candidates.
Now, we don't have at this moment, and apparently will not have next Wednesday, the sort of situation where the candidates are truly neck and neck and people don't really know that much about either one. In this case, we have an incumbent president people know a lot about, maybe too much about. And in the other case, we have a guy whose image is troubled in the making, troubled in the development. And we're still trying to find a way to wrap our arms around Mitt Romney the way the country largely wrapped its arms around Ronald Reagan in 1980, even around George W. Bush in 2000. So that's the challenge for him, is to cuddle up to the American psyche in the next several days and find a way on Wednesday night to not only put President Obama on the defensive, I think he will do that. I think he'll be very aggressive. He'll come out swinging. But also in doing that, to show himself to be something other than the parodies and the caricatures that we're getting at this point.
But if you think of it, Obama really has had some kind of a rocky moment the last couple of days. The fact that he decided he would not meet with foreign leaders in the UN, but instead would meet with those horrible terrorists at The View, especially that notorious Barbara Bin Walters. I mean, that was pretty intense. There seems to be a bunch of things that are not going especially well for the president. There's still a debate within the State Department about what really happened with the embassy in Libya when Ambassador Stevens was killed. The thing is, there seems to be some indication of some confusion in the Obama administration about what really happened at the U.S. with the U.S. ambassador in Libya and the violence that took his life. There seems to be conflicting stories. And again, it could give Mitt Romney an opportunity to go on the offensive, but he can't do that when he's still trying to defend his own comments that have been, you know, widely quoted in the press.
It is an opening for him, though, when we get to foreign policy. The problem is that the first debate is domestic.
Right.
The second debate is vice presidents. The third debate is a town hall. And we don't get to the foreign policy debate until October 22nd. That is fully more than 3 weeks away right now. And that's a long time to wait for Romney to use that particular opening. But he has been trying to widen that opening. He does sense the vulnerability that's there. And even though he has to wait until the foreign policy debate, in all likelihood, to really get some of those licks in, he was talking about it this week at the Clinton Global Initiative, to which he was invited by the former president. And this is a little bit of what he had to say.
A lot of Americans, including myself, are troubled by developments in the Middle East. Syria has witnessed the killing of tens of thousands of people. The president of Egypt is a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. Our ambassador to Libya was assassinated in a terrorist attack. Iran is moving toward nuclear weapons capability. We somehow feel that we're at the mercy of events rather than shaping events.
Ron, clearly Mitt Romney feels he does have opportunities regarding foreign policy. There may be some economic opportunities as well, with a stubborn unemployment, with U.S. Debt numbers still being much higher than anybody would like, including the Obama administration. And obviously, Romney would love to make this case in his three debates with President Obama. But one thing that's also maybe kind of difficult for him is the fact that early voting is upon us. It starts this Friday in Iowa. A lot of swing states like Ohio, like North Carolina, have early voting. And again, you know, I grew up when, you know, voters had all the opportunities to take everything into consideration and make their judgment on election day. But here we're talking about voting perhaps a month, if not more, in advance. And if Romney is seen with the disadvantages, at least as of this time, early voting can't possibly help him.
You know, we should talk about this more as we come closer to Election Day. But don't you feel like most of the people who vote early are the kind of people who've had their mind made up here for a long time? They don't have any trouble making up their mind. They're not undecided voters. They're the kind of people who would not be reached by any event that might take place between now and November. And they're just, you know, they're the lockaways.
You're probably right. I mean, those are the folks who are voting early are more likely those who have made up their minds for the longest time and not likely to change it. But if I were Mitt Romney, I would really hope that voters don't decide until November 6th, because right now he's not doing that well.
One of the consequences, too, of this movement in the polls, where so many polls are moving in the same direction all at the same time, is that some of the money decisions that would normally be made at this point by a campaign are distorted by that. So they have pulled their money, the Romney campaign, out of Pennsylvania. We're not sure exactly where they do plan to concentrate, except, of course, Ohio and Florida. And they have an ever-narrowing window here. We have said for some time, no Republican has ever won the presidency without winning Ohio. Of course, it can be done. It would necessitate, however, at least carrying Florida, Virginia, North Carolina, and, you know, making a good showing in some of these other states we've already mentioned. It's hard to see how Mitt Romney wins without both Florida and Ohio. But if he gets Florida, at least he has a shot.
You were talking about momentum. There's also a seeming momentum on the Senate side as well. Many Democrats who have been either dead even or even trailing in some races seem to have moved ahead. In Massachusetts, for example, where they had a big debate this week, Scott Brown and Elizabeth Warren basically were dead even for the longest time. In most polls I've seen the last couple of days, Elizabeth Warren seems to have moved ahead. In Wisconsin, where Tammy Baldwin was down maybe 5-6 points about a month ago, that race is seemingly dead even. In Virginia, which was between George Allen and Tim Kaine, that was supposed to be a dead even race. And now in most polls, Tim Kaine has moved ahead. So the momentum we're seeing possibly for President Obama in these swing states, in these key Senate races, it's been good news for the Democrats, too, as of late.
And here again, it may not be so much Obama momentum. It may not be so much a slight improvement in his rating for approval of his job or how people feel about the economy, although those numbers, still negative, are getting a little better. It may not have that much to do with Obama. It may have more to do with Mitt Romney and the image of the Republicans right at this moment. So a lot of their big money outfits, people like American Crossroads and Crossroads GPS and so on, Americans for Prosperity, are suddenly looking more intently at some of these Senate races and trying to decide whether or not they want to help some of those candidates hang on to their leads or get elected, a Tommy Thompson in Wisconsin, and even perhaps a Todd Akin in Missouri. For a long time, they tried to freeze him out and force him to quit the ballot. The last date for him to do that has now passed. I wouldn't be surprised to see some of these groups come back in and say, well, all right, we don't like what he said about rape. We don't like that phrase, legitimate rape, that he used, but we're still going to give him money because we want the Republican Party to capture the Senate and we need Missouri.
Well, as unpredictable as that race started out to be with Akin basically, I thought, self-destructing with that legitimate rape and pregnancy comment, what has happened more recently is extremely predictable. Once, as you say, once that September 25th window for Akin to drop out of the race passed and Akin did not leave, then you knew, first of all, McCaskill did not attack Akin prior to that day because she desperately wanted him to stay in the race. Now that he's in the race and the deadline has passed, McCaskill is now going up, blasting Akin, mocking every comment he's ever had, including legitimate rape. And I suspect that the fact that, one, that she's outspending him 10-1, two, that the national Republican groups have pulled out, gives her the opportunity to just win this race going away. Now, there are some Republicans like Jim DeMint, like Mike Huckabee, like Newt Gingrich. They say, wait a second, Todd Akin is still our nominee. We're going to stand by him. And I suspect it's very possible that the National Republican Senatorial Committee in Washington might come back to that race if they feel it's doable. But what I've also noticed about Todd Akin is that Democrats in other states, like we saw with Elizabeth Warren in that debate the other day, she said a vote for Scott Brown is a vote for Todd Akin. Because if you're voting for Scott Brown, you're voting for a Republican Senate. And if you have a Republican Senate, you may have Todd Akin. You may have Jim Inhofe as chairman of the Environmental Committee. So Todd Akin is almost a national buzzword for the Democrats as well.
So while Elizabeth Warren is running against Todd Akin and other Republicans in other states, her actual opponent, Scott Brown, the incumbent senator in Massachusetts, is making use of the controversy from earlier this summer and earlier this year about the Cherokee Nation origin of Elizabeth Warren and how that might have been used at stages along her career to entitle her to special treatment as a Native American. This has led to, well, some controversial behavior at some of Scott Brown's rallies.
Obviously, those were Scott Brown supporters mocking Elizabeth Warren's claim that she has American Indian heritage. But of course, there are a lot of people who felt, perhaps justifiably, that that was a little bit racist, a little over the top, and kind of mocking the Indian culture. But one thing it has done is that Scott Brown, as we saw in the debates, as we're seeing in the new commercials, has gone after Elizabeth Warren on this claim. Now, we've known about this claim for some time, but by doing it, by focusing on this in the debate, by focusing this in the ads, the good guy Scott Brown, that he is so careful, the image that he's so carefully cultivated over this past year or so, could be in jeopardy. If he's going to become negative, if he's going to become nasty, that could hurt him, especially in a state where, as we've said earlier, Obama is going to beat Romney by 30, 35 points. So Scott Brown is going to have to run above this kind of stuff. And if he becomes one of those attack Republicans, at least in the words of Elizabeth Warren, that could jeopardize his chances.
The question that arises there is, why would Scott Brown have taken this turn at this point in this campaign when he had been ahead, when he seemed to be holding his own, when it was all about him and his performance and about his ideas? Why has he chosen this particular line of attack against Elizabeth Warren? It seems a risky strategy when he was still doing all right in the polls, but it did seem to indicate some fear that a shift had taken place and that the ground was moving in the other direction and that he needed to turn around and get tough. In much of the way that we're seeing Republicans urge Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan to turn around and get tough in the closing weeks of this campaign nationally.
We did see Elizabeth Warren coming out of the Democratic convention following her speech with a little bump in the polls that have not gone away, and that could be also part of Scott Brown's realization.
And that could also be part of the end for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
In sunny Seattle, I'm Ron Elving.
And in somewhere in Washington, D.C., I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week, won't you, when we should be reunited in Washington to chew over the first of this year's presidential debates, which will have been just the night before on It's All Politics from NPR.
Ron, by the way, I'll be in St. Louis next week for Talk of the Nation.
Well, good for you.
You I'm going back to Massachusetts. Something's telling me I must go home.